Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 153 on June 24, 2011. It's a muggy gray day in Cambridge, Massachusetts, a good day to curl up with a good library ebook, which you'll be able to do with your Kindle by the end of this year. And in the meantime, I think you'll be intrigued to listen to this week's guest talk about new developments in the world of ebook lending by libraries. David Burley is Director of Marketing for Overdrive, which is partnering with Amazon to bring library lending to the Kindle by the end of the year.
We're certainly of the mind that libraries will continue to flourish and provide valuable services as a focal point of a community and supporting the needs throughout the community. Digital collections, I think, allow them to reach more of their community.
In news, I'll be talking again about Harry Potter, an accessibility plugin for Kindle for PC, and more thoughts on the new Nook. For the tech tip, I'm going to pass along a mistake I was making that rendered my Kindle 3G with special offers inoperable and how you can avoid it. In content, I'll have a free bio of baseball great Mickey Mantle and an update for a useful Kindle app. First up in news, J.K. Rowling ended the suspense building at her new website, Pottermore.com, by announcing in a video message that she is going to release ebook versions of the Harry Potter series herself through direct sales at the site starting in October.
Pottermore will be the place where fans of any age can share, participate in, and rediscover the stories. It will also be the exclusive place to purchase digital audiobooks and, for the first time, ebooks of the Harry Potter series.
Many mysteries remain, from what Rowling will charge for the ebooks to whether or not they will be released with digital rights management. A story by Dean Wilson in the London Inquirer on June 23rd stated that the ebooks will not contain DRM, but will instead carry a watermark identifying the original purchaser, but he attributed that astounding bit of news to no one at Pottermore or anywhere else, including Sony, which is collaborating with Rowling's in developing the site. The unofficial Apple weblog, tuaw.com, also stated there would be no DRM on the Harry Potter books and highlighted the blow Rowling's initiative represents for Apple, which was no doubt hoping to land the audiobook portion of Pottermore's new digital offerings and probably the ebooks as well for iBooks. In trying to understand the formatting issues of this development, I emailed Joshua Talent and Chris Casey at eBook Architects, who with their third teammate Toby Stevenson host the excellent eBook Ninjas podcast. I asked Chris Casey if it would be technically possible for Rowling to directly publish her books with DRM protection. He replied that it is possible for her to put DRM on EPUB files for devices using Adobe's backend, that would be Nook, Sony, and Kobo, using Adobe Content Server. That's a software product that's out of reach for most individuals, he said, but certainly not for Rowling. Chris added, however, I don't believe they could do so for the Kindle files or for EPUB files destined for iBooks without dealing with Amazon and Apple. It sounds as if the eBooks really will be DRM free. I just haven't heard anyone from Pottermore.com say explicitly. They just say they want to have them available for all devices. Another clue in the mystery is that Overdrive, from whom we'll hear in the interview, was identified as the company that will handle distribution of the ebooks for Pottermore. Joshua Talent emailed me today saying that using Overdrive might enable Rowling to sell the books with DRM because Overdrive has the capability of selling the ebooks with DRM. So we'll see. I frankly would be surprised if the Harry Potter books are released without DRM. But if that turns out to be the case, it'll be a major milestone in the evolution of ebooks. Second in news, listener Nick Todd of Southampton tipped me off to a new Kindle accessibility feature I hadn't known about. He emailed, I happened to hear BBC Radio 4's In Touch yesterday, a program for the blind and partially sighted, and they did a piece on ebooks. One item of note was the Kindle for Accessibility plugin, which apparently allows users to have text-to-speech on the PC Kindle application, even if the publisher has disabled text-to-speech for the Kindle. Here's an excerpt.
Amazon have released a free piece of software for PC computers called Kindle for PC with Accessibility Plugin, which, when downloaded, uses your own computers reading voices to navigate menus, etc., but uses the Kindle's own voice to actually read aloud books, irrespective of whether the publisher has chosen to allow or disallow the read aloud function.
It only works for the Kindle for PC app at this point. Amazon warns it's a very large file. I'll include the Amazon link with information about it in the show notes. And thanks very much, Nick, for passing it along. Last up in news, I want to talk about an experience I had this week with my new Nook Simple Touch Reader that shows the benefits of Amazon's go-it-alone strategy for formatting and DRM on the Kindle. When I tried to connect my new Nook to my MacBook Pro in order to sideload a book that I'd borrowed from the Boston Public Library using OverDrive's system, I received a message from Adobe Digital Editions, the software that manages content on the Nook, that I had activated too many devices. So I called Barnes & Noble tech support, and it took about 15 minutes for the agent there to figure out that he couldn't help me. He told me I had to call Adobe. That was yesterday, so today I called Adobe, wading through a forest of menu prompts covering all their different products, and Adobe Digital Editions was never even mentioned. So when I finally got to the other last possibility, I got a request to leave my phone number so they could call me back in 15 minutes. While I waited, I stumbled on a chat feature at the Adobe website, and the chat agent eventually was able to add 4 devices to my Adobe registration, covering the new Nook and also the OverDrive app on my iPad. Now, this sort of a treasure hunt for assistance would be unthinkable in the Kindle sphere, where Amazon decided to build its own DRM system instead of paying Adobe to do that function. There are thus no handoffs to another player when something goes wrong on your Kindle. Amazon's taking some heat from this, the people that get all upset about it being a closed system, but when you see the problems that develop with a system that has responsibility shared, like the companies that use Adobe's DRM, I think it's an example of the benefits of the path that Amazon has taken. This week's tech tip is kind of a sad story because my Kindle 3G with special offers this past Sunday morning simply died. It froze up and it wouldn't wake up from whatever offer was on the screen. I tried several times to restart it by holding the power button to the side for 20 seconds. Then I called Kindle support, got them within just a couple of minutes, and they had me do the reset a couple of times more just to make sure that it was actually not functioning, and then the agent said that they would replace it, which was fine. I asked how come the problem had developed, and the agent asked if I put the Kindle to sleep each time I finished using it. I said yes, this is really what I've always done with my Kindles, and in fact, because of the special offers screensavers, I sometimes wake my Kindle back up if I don't like the screensaver that has shown up, and then put it to sleep again to change to a different screensaver. For example, I always changed it when it was an Oil of Olay ad. I'm not too interested in that, and I much prefer the really neat scenes of luxury hotels that are on the Visa card ad. So I would, you know, just shop around till I found a screensaver I liked. But all of this forced sleep apparently can be bad for the Kindle, the agent informed me. He said it's better to simply close the cover of your Kindle and let it go to sleep on its own in a couple of minutes. I've frankly never heard that before, but I've made the change in my Kindle usage, and now I have to wait until I come back to my Kindle to see what the special offer might be, and that's kind of a minor change in my routine. By the way, this incident led to one of those "who are these guys" moments regarding Amazon's incredible customer service. The agent said that my new Kindle would arrive by Tuesday. This was Sunday morning, remember. On Sunday afternoon, the doorbell rang, and it was my new Kindle. I couldn't believe it. David Burley is Director of Marketing for OverDrive, a digital media distribution company based in Cleveland that enables public libraries, schools, and colleges to lend ebooks to patrons. Amazon and OverDrive 2 months ago announced that Kindle users will finally be able to participate in the library lending program by the end of this year. In addition, OverDrive, beginning today, June 24th, at the American Library Association annual meeting in New Orleans, is going to be revealing details of a new set of capabilities it's calling OverDrive Win. I spoke with David on Wednesday, June 22nd, by Skype and telephone, and began by asking him what OverDrive will be announcing at the ALA meeting.
Yeah, OverDrive Win is a new series of platform enhancements that we believe will create a win-win-win for libraries, publishers, and readers. As everyone knows, it's been an exploding growth and an accelerating demand for ebooks in libraries. And so we've been working with all of the above, libraries, publishers, and readers, to understand and really develop the solutions that are going to help libraries continue to meet this growing demand.
Now, when you say exploding growth, let's just stop there and give people a feel for what's your favorite way of demonstrating how fast the growth has been in use of digital books, primarily from public libraries?
Sure. The one way of describing it is we're getting close to 50 million checkouts in our history, where last year we did about 15 million checkouts across the Overdrive network. This year we're almost at 15 million already, halfway through 2011. So
wow.
That tells you we're probably double again this year over last year. And last year was a double over 2009. Another way of describing the growth is our mobile apps and mobile downloads, which are now compatible with all the major mobile operating systems, iPhone, iPad, BlackBerry, Windows Phone just came out recently, and the Android phones and tablets. Those have all just come out in the past 6 or 7 months, and we're already over 1.4 million installs of those apps.
Wow.
So that's another good indicator of how the demand has continued to increase among readers of all ages. And across libraries, public libraries, school libraries, college libraries that we serve in the United States and outside the U.S.
Is this growth, it strikes me in general terms, it's probably tracking the growth in the sale of e-reader devices and e-books that people are buying on them. Or are you seeing any kind of a different curve to the growth on the borrowing of e-books compared to that other side of it?
No, I think it is mirroring pretty much the same curve. I just saw another headline this morning that Barnes & Noble is selling 3 ebooks for every 1 print book on barnesandnoble.com. We've seen similar numbers and percentages and ratios from Amazon and others. So I think in libraries it mirrors the demand overall of this shift into the digital realm. So, you know, libraries are no different. They've always been a place for readers to find books, and now this is no different. We're just kind of shifting into the digital space.
Interesting. Well, let's go back to Overdrive Win. What are some of the top features that you'll be announcing at the American Library Association annual conference?
Well, there's 2 main areas of features that we're going to be talking about at the conference. One is about the streamlined experience, and we're going to be doing a few things over the next several months of adding lots of new features to streamline the user experience and getting browsing, discovering, checking out, and downloading e-books to their devices, to their computers. You can still read or listen right here on your PC or Mac. You can transfer over to, you know, Sony Reader, the Nook, the standalone independent e-readers, as well as I said, the mobile devices that have direct download. So one of the things we're going to be doing is, of course, adding Kindle to our library lending program. And so that's going to be coming later this year.
Now, do you expect that on December 31st or before the holiday season?
I wish I could say a specific date, but later this year is about all I can do at this point.
Okay.
One other thing that we're going to be doing is really simplifying the browse and discovery process for ebooks, both for the library selectors, so the collection development people who are actually creating and adding the lists for the virtual branch websites that readers get to look at, as well as for the readers themselves. So instead of worrying about a specific format, whether it's PDF or EPUB, we're going to be serving up simply ebooks. So that way the ebooks will just be matched, whatever format that is going to be compatible with the device that the visitor has mentioned. We'll be able to serve that up, but whether they're browsing on a particular OS, it'll recognize what will work with that particular platform.
So somewhere in the, so if I go to, say, the Boston Public Library site where I'm a member, at some point I'll simply tell them which device I'm using, and then when I browse to a title, they will just automatically send me the right one?
That's right. That's right. And so that's part of the process. Either it'll, you know, it'll be a sniff it out sort of process where it'll understand and know, you know, which system you are on, or if you, or you will explicitly tell it, you know, that I want to put this on this device or that device. When you're coming in on a mobile phone, it'll know obviously which device you're on as well.
Right.
So that way it'll eliminate that step that you have to kind of figure out and see different formats, and some of them may not be compatible. So we're trying to simplify that process. Also, it's a good benefit for the selector, the librarian who's in there building the collection. They don't have to decide, should we get so many versions of this and so many versions of that, or so many files, so many copies of this particular file format. You know, more and more people are coming out with EPUB, which is great, but there are still other books out there, and certainly in the backlist, that either have both file formats still available, or other ones that may you know, make that process a little more cumbersome for them.
Can you say anything about the Nook and whether it's going to kind of make similar advances in the ease of a Nook reader getting books from the library that appear to be on the horizon for the Kindle?
You know, I don't have anything to announce about the Nook.
Okay.
Right now it is compatible. I expect it to be continue to be compatible with ebooks from the library.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any other enhancements to announce at this time.
Okay. And then the other one that I talked with Jay Marine at Amazon a couple of weeks back, and he said that one neat thing is that if you're reading a library book on your Kindle and you get to the end of the loan period, there'll be a simple way. He didn't describe the details of it, but he said it'd be seamless. You'd be able to buy that book so that you could finish reading it even though your time was up at the library. Is that something that other ebook retailers are going to be moving to, or perhaps already are enabled to do, or is that something that's out there in the future?
Well, that is one of the aspects of the WIN program that we will be rolling out, and we don't have a lot of detail on that now.
Oh.
But as I said, under the streamlined experience, we had a couple of titles or a couple of features, as I mentioned. Our second area of enhancements for the OverDrive WIN program is access to more content.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing there is we're going to be providing not only some ebook samples, which are excerpts of most titles of ebooks,
yeah.
We're also going to be adding a patron-driven acquisition model, and it's going to be a little bit different, where we're going to be talking about allowing readers to recommend titles to their library if they don't have it, but they will be able to see entire catalogs from certain publishers, and they can recommend certain titles from those publishers to their library. But also, if it's not available, we can make it so that if they want it now, they may purchase it themselves at a select group of booksellers that we make available through the library's website.
I'm picturing a place where I can go and browse for books that I might want to borrow. But since I have to have a library card for any individual library to borrow an ebook,
right,
I would have to tell you which libraries I want you to send the information that there's interest in a particular book.
Yeah, you would still start at the library's website that you have
the
card at. Right?
I see. So from there, you're going to this place where you can kind of look at a broader selection of books.
Right. I mean, it's still going to be within the library's catalog.
I see.
It's just they're not going to necessarily have it in stock, so to speak. Digitally, they may have access to the records.
Yeah.
And you can have access to some excerpts or what we're calling ebook samples. And one of the reasons we want to do that is we really want to continue to make the library the first stop on the web for digital content. And so because we are the only provider right now that is providing all formats on a single website: ebooks, audiobooks, music, video. We have interactive content now with Disney Digital Books. We're going to be announcing another supplier soon with that, actually at ALA as well. But we're providing that all in one place so that the library, as they are now, as a community center for books, information, and resources online, we want to continue to develop their website and their catalogs and help enhance that as the first stop that you would go when you want to go sample ebooks, you want to get download them or have access to a bookseller through them.
Well, it's interesting to imagine what's ahead for libraries when you look at what's happening to bookstores and the difficulty to make this transition to more and more use of ebooks. If a library ends up with more of its titles being borrowed in ebook format than the physical books, which is now that's the case on Amazon and, as you said, at Barnes & Noble, what does it do to the requirements for buildings and just the whole way a library has its presence in a community?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we're certainly of the mind that libraries will continue to flourish and provide valuable services as a focal point of a community and supporting the needs throughout the community. Digital collections, I think, allow them to reach more of their community. They're already doing that with creative services, providing internet access and providing programs that are so vital to their communities. As far as impact on how they, deal with their physical property and so forth, that's something that's a good question for them to address. But I know that there are ways to integrate this increase on the digital space with their physical property. They have lots of computer stations. There's ways to download inside the library. There are lending of devices, so there's all kinds of things that many libraries are doing now, very creative, and to continue to reach out to the community and provide these valuable services.
What if I was a really forward-thinking librarian or just town official in Medicine Bow, Wyoming, and I wanted to create a virtual library that wouldn't have any building or books or anything? It would basically be a computer somewhere, but I had great web designing skills and a vision for kind of a national library. Would I be able to open up a relationship with Overdrive and do this kind of work even though I didn't have a physical location?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if I've seen an example of that. We certainly support libraries and schools all over the world, as well as retail booksellers, and some of whom have physical presences and some of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
So from a library standpoint, if they were a real library that wants to provide a lending model, that's an interesting scenario. I really can't say how we would address that, but we serve libraries of all kinds, and that would be an interesting scenario to look at.
Huh. Well, if there's any entrepreneurs out there listening, maybe that's could be a good business model to set up. Now, another thing that is part of Overdrive Win information I've seen is yesterday you announced that O'Reilly Media is going to make its 1,500 books available without DRM. But I wasn't sure what's the significance of that.
Well, the significance is that without DRM, it allows compatibility with virtually all e-readers, and so it's serving up an EPUB file without that without the encryption, and it's the encryption that does cause some compatibility issues with some devices. So it does eliminate that. O'Reilly has been a very vocal proponent of no DRM, so we've been happy to work with that. The significance is also that we're able to incorporate that format, because it's basically a new format to the back end, to the front end. It's not a new format, so to speak, to the reader, to the casual user, but to the back end in our systems, we are able to work with no DRM files. So that's an advantage for libraries and schools that work with us, that they have access to more content. And O'Reilly has, as I said, has not been in the library before, again, because it's a little tricky to kind of incorporate something without DRM into a system that has only handled DRM ebooks. We do use and have incorporated no DRM audiobooks into our system. And so this is, they're among the first, they're not the first, but they're the largest ebook supplier that does not use DRM.
Would there still be an ability for a library to put a time limit on how long you'd have the book if there's no DRM on it?
Within the OverDrive Media Console and within the Adobe Digital Editions, it will know when you checked out the book, and it will know when it would then expire, yes.
I see. But if you had some other devices that were using the Adobe Digital Edition software, you could put it on as many as you liked, but they would all know what the due date was.
That's correct.
Huh. Interesting. There's a mention of always available ebook collections for simultaneous access of romance, self-help, young adult, children's, and other materials. How does that always available collection differ from other aspects of what you're offering?
Well, the majority of our collections of our 500,000 to 600,000 titles that are in the OverDrive catalog, and that does not include out of copyright titles. Those are all in copyright premium titles in our catalog, the majority of which are one copy, one user. So when one copy is checked out, it is unavailable to be checked out by anyone else until it's returned. And the library can acquire multiple licenses for the book so that they can serve more patrons at the same time. And that's the majority of titles that you'll see. By adding more simultaneous access ebooks that will be always available, you're not going to have the holds, you're not going to have the waiting lists that have accumulated due to the accelerating demand for ebooks as you visit these websites. We've heard lots of questions about why there's no ebooks available, and that's because the collections are still only a few years old for most libraries, and so they're continuing to build up their collections. And as they're continuing to shift and add more ebooks and audiobooks to their collections, we're also adding this as a model for libraries to choose from so that these books will always be available no matter if they're checked out or not, because they will, they're in the simultaneous use, always available model.
Does that ratchet up the cost to the library if a title's very popular? Are they getting charged more if more people borrow the book?
It's not based on a per-use basis. It's more of a subscription, and so it is based on the population served, and it is it's a sliding scale and publishers. You would purchase by publisher certain packages of titles.
I see.
And so then it's more of a subscription that you can see how this is circulating, and then you can decide to renew or not at the end of the year. It's a 12-month subscription. So it's a different model, again, that gives libraries flexibility and being able to serve their market.
Yeah, because it is a little frustrating sometimes when you go through a list of ebooks at a library, you have to kind of scroll down a ways before you get some that you can actually put in your cart.
Right. Right, that's true, and we understand that. And again, it's when you compare, we've heard comments on blogs and questions that we get. They have a million books in their physical libraries. Why don't they have that many on their digital library? And the answer is, many of these have just started their collections in the past couple of years. Ebooks really themselves have only become more mainstream in the last year or not much more than that. Even with the Kindle coming out in 07 and the Sony Reader out a year or two before then, the ebooks and libraries really have accelerated only in the past year or two.
Yeah. Well, now, what's the latest? There was news not too long ago that at least one publisher was going to impose a checkout limit on the number of times a library ebook could be borrowed. I'm not sure, was it ever identified as to who that, there were a couple of publishers.
Yeah, there was HarperCollins.
Yeah.
And they are not unlike other publishers who do have concerns about, you know, making this a sustainable model, and that's where the Overdrive Win, you know, series of platform enhancements comes in, that we really want to make it a win-win-win for libraries, readers, and publishers, so that it is a sustainable model, that they continue to operate successfully, libraries can continue to operate successfully, and readers can continue to get the books that they want, and that they can continue to go to their libraries as their first stop to check out just about any sort of title. So yes, Harper instituted this 26 checkout limit back in, I believe it was March. And it was met, obviously, with some concern from libraries and readers, and but they've been very open and have been in dialogue with us and with different groups about, you know, why they're doing it and just exactly what their concerns are, and continuing to, I think, look at other alternatives and continuing to figure out what's going to be best for them and for the and for the libraries.
How does the WIN change? How do the WIN changes address those publisher concerns? Does it do it in a way that might lead HarperCollins to say, okay, this system makes us less uneasy, so therefore we'll drop the 26 use limit?
Yeah, I don't know that they're going to drop it, but by giving them other avenues for exposing their entire catalogs, as we talked about earlier, by giving readers you know, access to their entire catalogs and making recommendations to purchase a title, also giving readers access to booksellers immediately once they've sampled the title. So it's a way to kind of connect the readers again with the book, whether it's through the library or through a bookseller, and giving the publishers more flexibility and more discoverability of their titles, and mainly mid and backlist. I don't think there's been any, well, I shouldn't say that. There's, you know, certainly with the demand, there's been, you know, people are focusing on the front list, which are the, you know, the more current bestsellers and the popular titles. This gives libraries, the publishers, more opportunity to showcase their mid and backlist as well.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So if you give them more ways for people to discover books that they'd buy from the publishers, then they might find themselves more flexible on the terms for the borrowing.
Right, right. And whether that's the ultimate goal or not, all it is, or what we're trying to do is continue to give them opportunities in the library, you know, to determine if it's one copy, one user, or the simultaneous use model, if it's, you know, giving them the ability to showcase their entire catalog. It's just giving them more choices that they can see, and whether they want to continue with checkout limits or other types of models. It's just, we're able to accommodate them, and we're able to give them increased exposure to make libraries that place that people want to go.
What percent of libraries in the U.S. now participate in your program?
It depends on how you define that. I think we're up to, our number that we're using now is about 15,000 libraries worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
That does include lots outside the U.S. and includes some school libraries and some college libraries. So it's hard to say exactly what percentage of libraries, I would say, you know, 60-70% maybe. There's a lot of independent libraries and smaller libraries that we're continuing to talk to and adding to. We're creating consortia or smaller regional groups of libraries. We do continue to work with individual libraries as well as these groups. And so it's, I'm not sure what the percentage is. I just know that, you know, the number that we use is continuing to grow.
Yeah, you certainly reached critical mass in the whole thing of people expecting that this is something that they're going to be able to do.
Right.
How about independent authors? If I've got a novel, you know, there's a lot of self-publishing going on Amazon and on the Nook platform. Is it relatively easy for a serious independent author to approach OverDrive and become part of this system on a book or more they might have?
It is actually. We do work with about 1,000 publishers. We have, as I said, about between 500,000 and 600,000 titles in our inventory that we make available into the channel. So it's if you want to get in and sell digital books, then we're a good partner for you. We do work with large and small publishers, and we've even started working with some self-published authors recently, including J.A. Conrath and others. So
so is J.A. Conrath is part of the system now?
He is.
That's great.
And so there's an application process, and we have a publisher relations team that works with you and goes through the, certainly some criteria that we look at, and we unfortunately can't work with everybody.
Yeah.
But we do, as I said, work with both large and small publishers, and including self-published authors, and we're in 52 languages, and we're, looking for all genres and looking for content for new markets as we enter new markets, which requires different languages and so forth. So that's an ongoing effort on our part to really enhance the collection and to make the titles that are available to libraries that want them.
It's interesting to me that you're not a company that came into being around ebooks. OverDrive was founded in 1986, doing some other sort of media-related things. What percent of your revenue or operations now is roughly accounted for by the ebook lending program?
Well, we are a private company, so we don't disclose any revenue numbers. Mm-hmm. I would say certainly the majority of our business is an ebook distribution. And in fact, that's what we do. We are an ebook, an audiobook, digital book distributor to libraries, schools, and retail channels. Even back in 1986, we were early in the CD-ROM and digitization of books. Our first book back then was a law book, so we were converting and digitizing for a very small market, as you might imagine, back then, and continued to be at one point or another in the distribution process, whether it was the conversion exclusively or digitization. Got into the real distribution and the fulfillment side later in the 90s, and started with ebooks first in retail, and then got into the libraries in 2003, in this decade, or the last decade now, I guess, 2003, with ebooks, and then audiobooks quickly came on, and that's what helped really fuel the growth until ebooks again started getting hot in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. It's you really were positioned to catch the wave pretty effectively, it looks like.
Yeah, I think Steve Potash is our CEO and was a really early pioneer in helping figure out where things were going, and certainly we were very early and ahead of the curve in many ways. He was a founding member of the International Digital Publishing Forum, which had a different name when it was founded in either 2000 or 2001, and helped formulate many of the standards that are in place today. Was a past president in that organization when they developed the ebook or the EPUB standard. Mm-hmm. So they've made lots of inroads to help further the ebook industry. And again, that's bringing both distributors like us, as well as hardware, software, and publishers together to figure out, what are the things we need to do to help continue to grow the industry and to continue to make it worthwhile for all parties.
Well, I'm sure everybody listening to us now is excited about the prospect of it coming to the Kindle. How big a deal is that for OverDrive? That's a whole new sector of ebook readers that is going to be coming into your system.
Yeah, we're excited about it. It certainly allows libraries to continue to serve even more of their readers, more of their communities, and it's something that's going to continue to help fuel the growth of ebook lending. So we're excited because it gives us opportunities certainly to work with Amazon
we're just anxious to get started.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I've been talking with David Burley, Director of Marketing for Overdrive. Thanks a lot, David.
You're welcome. Thank you.
If you have not tried borrowing a library book from your local library using the Overdrive system on a non-Kindle e-reader, such as the Nook, Sony Reader, or Kobo, you can still check out their system using the Overdrive Media Console for iOS and Android devices. Once the Adobe Chat agent had added devices to my Adobe registration, I was able to download a book to my iPad from the Boston Public Library and read it very easily. It really will be fantastic when this capability comes to the Kindle, hopefully well before December 31st. I want to mention two quick items in content this week. One is a free Kindle book that I heard about from listener Bob Dashman. It's titled The Last Boy, Mickey Mantle and the End of America's Childhood by Jane Levy. It contains video clips, which you can see on non-Kindle apps like the iPad, where they show up vividly and play instantly after the download. They include conversations with the author and black and white photos of Mantle, and really add to the book. It's a great use of enhanced content that you can see in this free book that you'll be able to see the videos on something other than your Kindle. Also in content, Abby from the iReader Review blog has updated his very useful 99-cent notepad app for the Kindle, so now it's faster, contains new keyboard shortcuts, and a cut-and-paste capability. So, and I'll have a link in the show notes on how to get it. I downloaded, played around with it. It looks like a pretty substantive improvement in an application that was already very useful, one of the ones that I do actually use to write notes to myself on my Kindle, and that's pretty handy sometimes. We have time for a couple of comments. Tom Semple emailed me a couple of messages with really thorough analysis of the reported problems of the Nook in the clarity of the font. And he did a sort of a test on this. He took a screenshot of a typical reading page on the Kindle. He put the image in a screensaver folder that he created on the Nook. That's because you can have custom screensavers on the Nook. He invoked the screensaver. He compared the Kindle and the Nook in full sunlight, and he saw no appreciable difference. So to the extent that the Nook's fonts aren't as dark, he writes, it is because the stroke width is not as wide for some of the fonts, particularly at small text sizes. Nook has two sizes that appear to be smaller than the Kindle's smallest. At some point, you just run out of resolution needed to create dark letter forms. Kindle has the same problem, but by the way, with Topaz format, he writes, and the embedded fonts used there, Amazon has tweaked the fonts used for Mobi format to look their best, even at small sizes, but that effort doesn't translate to Topaz. He says Barnes & Noble seems to be using stock typefaces without any adjustments to take into account the properties of e-ink screens, and that appears to be causing the what I've found is a perceptible less clarity on the new Nook Simple Touch compared with the Kindle. So thanks, Tom, for taking a close look at that issue. Fred Ortel wrote with a very interesting idea, and I suggested that he pass it along to Kindle Feedback at Amazon. He wrote, I thought of a simple software application that Amazon can implement on the Manage My Kindle new page. How about showing as an option all the active books, magazines, blogs, games, etc. that are on my Kindle right now? Books, magazines, and blogs that I read, I place in archives. In a simple way, with one click, it would be easy to see what is active on my Kindle. I think that's a really cool idea. If you've got a cool idea or a comment, you can email me at podchronicles@gmail.com, or you can leave a message at the show notes page, thekindlechronicles.com. Depending on when you listen to this episode of the podcast, there may still be time to register for the free webinar that I'm going to present on Monday, June 27th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. The title is Formatting Content for E-Readers, and it's hosted by the Professional Outdoor Media Association, POMA. It's going to last a half an hour, and it's going to have time for questions. I had a lot of fun putting it together to try to give a guide to beginners on where to turn for formatting help. And I'll have a link to the registration button on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monegat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This is Len Edgerly from Cambridge, Massachusetts for the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.